Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
You're tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. What?
Oh, there's my mic. I'm actually really starting to kind of dig that music. Like, it kind of makes me rock out a little bit whenever
really?
It starts
well,
off.
Really? Well, play it at night.
Okay.
Hubba hubba.
Okay.
Why not? We only have five kids. Let's have six.
Okay.
What do you
One
say?
More.
All
Why
right.
not?
So, we are coming to you from the beautiful Line Hotel in Adams Morgan in our glassed-in studio that sits in the lobby, and we're glad to be here. We've got, you know, a lot of our past shows have been somewhat serious, and this is serious but in a more delicious vein, I have to say, because we're going to be talking about barbecue and grilling. Now, we're going to take a look at the history of barbecue in America. We're going to talk about techniques, gas, charcoal, wood, all that chisel. We're going to have fun. Jim Shaheen is here. He's the Smoke Signals Barbecue and Grilling columnist for the Washington Post.
Woohoo!
The evil, subversive Washington Post. I'm going to have you investigated as soon as this show's over.
You got it.
Right? You want to be investigated?
No.
You're more than welcome to investigate.
Okay. And Joe Newman's here. He's the owner and pitmaster at Sloppy Mama's, which is a great barbecue. We had you on our broadcast show, Foodie and the Beast. A couple of weeks ago, right?
A yeah. couple months ago.
February, maybe?
Yeah, a couple months
That's
ago.
That's to me, to an old guy, a couple
yeah,
of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
The fact that he remembers you being Time. On is, I mean, you're so...
Oh, Nancy, don't be that way. So, why don't you kick it off?
Okay, I know
you
so
have
here's
questions.
The thing. David and I, for those
oh, wait.
Of you...
What? Todd Thrasher.
Okay, let's
we
gotta
remember Todd Thrasher. Todd Thrasher's here.
Why'd you make us Todd Thrasher? So Todd Thrasher is the spirit advisor here at the Line
Spirited
Hotel.
Spirited advisor. Yes.
Spirited advisor at the yeah. Line Hotel.
He wants my job. Look at him. He's looking at me like, get out.
Can you stop
2 weeks
talking?
In a row, I'm very impressed with your showing up.
Yes, exactly.
It's
we're working
you
on
want
it.
My job.
Okay, so,
so since,
tell us.
So since I've been, I think I'm also now your spirited advisor on the show. So
I know, that's what I
Since
feel
we've
like.
Been doing this the last few weeks, months, we've talked about brothers and sisters, and we've talked about this little new distillery I'm opening. But mm-hmm. I have a little bar in Alexandria, Virginia that is going on 14 years old this year.
I was talking about that
yeah.
today,
so,
PX.
PX will be 14 in August. So I
the original
I should,
speakeasy
the original
of DC.
Speakeasy, well, even of the East Coast, let's be honest.
Okay, let's be honest.
The
Forget
world.
About New York.
The world.
World, I would go there. So this was the first cocktail I put on the menu at PX. This is called PX Champagne Cocktail. And it's going to sound very boozy.
Well, let's clink. We're going to have to clink.
Cheers.
Let's make the clinking noise.
Cheers.
Okay.
Come on,
Cheers.
Jim. Come over here, Jimmy. Come to me. There we are. All right.
So it's going to sound very boozy.
From you?
From me.
That
Cheers.
Sounds really strange. Go ahead.
Cheers.
Cheers.
It's plantation overproof rum, so it's like 130 proof. Grand Marnier.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of sugar and homemade cherry bitters. But I take all that stuff and I cook it for a while and get all the alcohol out of it. So even though there's a lot of flavor in there, there's not a ton of alcohol. And then there's just champagne on top. And I used Virginia sparkling wine called Fizz from Thibaut Janison.
We love Thibaut
in
Janison.
Charlottesville. So this was the original cocktail. This is the first cocktail I came up with at PX. So I was reminiscing
back,
this
back
weekend.
Back in your youth.
So
I'm still in my youth, my friend.
Yeah.
Unlike you.
That's what you think.
Okay. So wait a second. Is cooking down alcohol in a cocktail, is that a foreign concept? Is that something that people do?
No, not really. But I didn't want, because if I put all that booze in here, Grand Marnier and 151.
No, it sounds like a lot.
It's going to be a lot. I just wanted all the flavors without the alcohol, without the ABV in it.
What does a 151 proof alcohol rum provide that a lower proof rum?
I love the flavor of it.
Okay.
I love the flavor, that burn you get with it. Mm-hmm. That's what I love with it. But this, you're taking the burn out. You're just getting like heavy duty sugar cane with it.
Okay, cool.
That's it.
All right, my darling.
All right, y'all. Have fun.
Thank you.
Enjoy.
It's delicious.
Thank you.
Everybody should come here to the Lion Hotel to check out Todd Thrasher's cocktails because they are fabulous.
I think they should just come and check out Todd Thrasher.
Well, that goes without saying.
Little distillery, Tiki T&T, opening sometime in July at the Wharf.
July now?
July, let's do it.
All right, if you say so.
All right, let's talk barbecue.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know, David and I do another show called Foodie and the Beast. It's on Sundays. It's a big rocking party. This show allows us to dive a little deeper into single topics, and we really wanted to get into barbecue today. We're just about to hit Memorial Day, and we're everybody's buying grills.
More importantly, we just bought a new Weber, and it was delivered on Friday. So let's talk about us.
Okay, well, we bought a Weber. I wasn't happy about the purchase because it's a gas grill, and I wanted something that was either charcoal or wood-based, like a Big Green Egg or a charcoal Weber. But we brought in these two experts today to really talk about the history of barbecue, especially barbecue versus grilling, because two totally different things. But Jim, I'd love to start with you because you've been in the biz for a really long time and you've been writing about it for a really long time. So what created your love for barbecue?
What created my love for barbecue is moving from the north, where I grew up, to Texas.
Which is where?
And I grew up in Philly and Michigan.
Okay.
And spent my teenage years in Michigan, then moved down to Texas, where, you know, they're always talking about barbecue down there.
Or shooting something.
And and then smoking it, barbecuing it. And I, once I moved to Texas and tried barbecue, I remember thinking, I don't get it. What's all the talk about?
And was it because you had bad barbecue?
It turns out it was because I had had bad barbecue.
Okay.
I was going to all the wrong places. One night, I ended up late at night at this tiny little place called Sam's Barbecue, which was a real ramshackle little place on the crest of a hill. And the
those are always the places with the best barbecue.
Place, yeah, and I just sort of stumbled upon it, like some late night. And I ordered what's called a three meat plate down in Texas. And the three meat plate is brisket, ribs, and sausage. They have a type of German, spicy German sausage that's part of the thing there. They didn't used to have. They kind of got now, but they didn't used to have pulled pork. So that would be a three meat plate, and comes with usually a sort of a mashed potato-y kind of potato salad and pinto beans as opposed to the kind of beans we're more familiar with.
Sweet.
Yeah, the sweet beans. These are not at all sweet. Mm-hmm. And a coleslaw. So I remember getting this plate, and it was absolutely a revelation. Some people's lives are changed by a book. Some people by a movie. Mine was changed that night.
I can see that you're a substantive guy. Okay.
But so where were you in Texas? Because
Austin.
Austin. Because regionally, Texas doesn't have all the same barbecue, correct?
No, it doesn't. You're right. At that time, Austin, Texas did not really have much in the way of barbecue, which is one of the reasons.
How long ago are we talking about, roughly?
Oh,
I don't want to call you out. Right.
That would have been the late 70s.
Okay. So a totally different food scene than Austin today.
Yes.
My goodness,
yes,
right?
Yes, completely
okay.
Different food scene. Very little. And everybody would go out of Austin and into the country to get decent barbecue. And if you lived in Austin, you'd go to a mediocre barbecue place in Austin back then.
Okay.
But this place, Stevie Ray Vaughan had its barbecue shipped to him at Carnegie Hall when he played there. This place was really, 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 really great. And I'll just never forget my first taste of real barbecue.
So you have this amazing barbecue experience, and what's the light bulb? You're like, yeah, I'm going to write about barbecue.
What happened? I want to know everything I can about this thing, because this thing is so different than anything I've had that I've ever eaten, that I've ever experienced. And so I started reading about it, started cooking it. I tried to learn how to cook it. And back in the day, there was no internet. So you had to have...
Isn't that unbelievable? How did we survive? What did we do?
Well, you had... Well,
I had a hammer, a chisel, and a tablet.
What I did was apprentice. So that's what everybody did back then. You tried to find somebody that would take you under their wing. And I would throw out a couple of briskets because they just came out so bad. They were terrible.
I mean, so just so you know, for me growing up, you know, barbecue was ribs and chicken, period. I grew up in New Jersey with family in Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
But to me, brisket, you know, was what your grandmother did for Passover.
Dry,
and Yom Kippur.
Lifeless.
Right.
My brisket is not dry and lifeless.
But your grandmother's brisket.
Put that one away.
You could have built a hut with your grandmother's brisket.
But it would not have been smoked.
But can we go back?
But that's my point.
Right.
So was brisket always smoked?
In Texas.
In Texas?
Yeah. I mean, unless you're talking Jewish brisket. Then
well, no,
of course,
I'm talking Jewish brisket.
Yeah, but if you're talking barbecue, then yes, it's smoked just like pulled pork. And
but is that part of the
barbecue.
History of barbecue?
Yes.
Brisket.
All right.
So I
want to take
us question.
Back to the history of barbecue. Okay. Because now it's, you know, barbecue, there's a lot of grilling around the world, and the world has its own kind of versions of that. But what are the origins of barbecuing, aside from, you know, a dinosaur falling into a forest fire, you know, and being eaten by Fred Flintstone?
That's grilling.
That's how it started.
That's grilling. That's not barbecue.
Yeah. Well if we want to
for
get
Fred Flintstone, it was both.
If the fire was next to it, then it was barbecue.
That's perfect
But
answer.
I mean, you know, yeah. How did all perfect this answer. Get going, and why is it sort of uniquely American?
Well, the history of American barbecue, I mean, there's a lot of argument in these circles about what's barbecue and what's not. But, you know, like in South America, they're going to have foods that are smoked indirectly, which for all intents and purposes is what we would consider to be barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
So barbecue is smoking and grilling is with the fire right
fast.
On the meat.
It's
right?
fast fire, yeah. Okay. Whereas, so in America, what happened is when... You know, Columbus got here. He and the Europeans saw the Taino Indians in the Caribbean using the word barbecue comes from a platform of green sticks. So they had fire at the bottom of this platform, and they had the food on the top platform, the green sticks, and it was cooked very indirectly over a long period of time. And the original word was a word they couldn't pronounce from the Taino Indian, and it sounded something like what became barbacoa, the Spanish word, and then that became anglicized into the English word barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the sort of the very short, but you know, a little bit longer than you get into the plantation culture, where slaves created a lot of what we now consider to be barbecue, because then you had pits that were in underneath the ground as opposed to now cooking above the ground, but it was still the basic same idea, which is a certain degree of distance, roughly anywhere from 18 inches to 3 feet away from the food, so that the food, the collagens in the food would, they needed to cook very slowly
slow
to break down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's basically, you know, that's roughly a short history.
So when the Hawaiians bury a pig, that's not barbecue.
No, I think you could yeah. consider that to be barbecue. Because, you know, the Mexicans, for example, will make a type of, well, what's called barbacoa, and they'll take a cow's head and they'll put it in banana leaves, and they'll put it in the ground, and then it'll come out.
Do they
about 12
kill
years.
The cow first? Or they
yeah, generally, they do. Yes. They do it right.
If
yeah.
I was the cow, I'd want to kill myself.
But and it comes out, and it's unbelievably good. Not many folks do that anymore because it's so intensive, and there's health laws and all that. But so you get when you get barbacoa now in Texas or elsewhere, it's more often sort of boiled or braised. But you still can get it. It's just it's hard to get. But when you do get it, it's insane. It's unbelievable.
So barbecue okay. is really North American, South American, Native American sort of generated. Okay,
and Caribbean, yeah.
and anywhere the Spanish went.
Yeah.
Well, I want to get into
Joe. African American too. Yeah.
Joe, for just a second. Yeah. So, Joe, let's get your background. You're with Sloppy Mamas, but you had a little progression on how you became a purveyor of barbecue.
Yeah, you were a brain surgeon first,
right? You were. Right.
No, I used to be a history teacher, teaching high school history, and one of the subjects I taught was U.S. history. So, in getting ready for that, those lessons and doing research and things like that, you do get into, you know, the pre-United States area, which is colonialism and, you know, Columbus coming
My
over.
God, a teacher that actually yeah. prepared for class. That's amazing.
Oh, most
stop.
Of them do.
I think they all do.
But lying. the transfer of livestock, for example, goes with the cooking technique. So the Taino were, you know, doing the indirect cooking with the reeds over the fire. Well, as the Spaniards see that, they start to take that with them, as well as, you know, bringing cattle over, and then the pigs going to Europe and that sort of thing. So it was the cooking technique, but also the, you know, what they were cooking, getting moved around as well.
What about the Algonquins and the Apaches and the Nez Perce and all those guys? What were they? I mean, were they barbecuing as well, or were they, because they dried their meats? You know, the Plains Indians hung it on racks and dried it. It was like
essentially
like
they were
jerky.
Smoking them. Right. They were just smoking for a really long
time.
But
is smoking considered barbecue? I mean, what do we say the definition of barbecue is?
So I think barbecue is a food genre. Mm-hmm. Okay, so barbecue can mean a couple different things. But barbecue as a food genre, one of them is smoking. Okay, and smoked meat, for me as a professional, is what barbecue is. Mm-hmm. You know, you can get into, I'm going to have a barbecue. Okay, and then you're probably breaking out the propane grill and, you know, firing up some burgers and hot dogs.
Judgment, no judgment. Sort of just a little bit of judgment.
Yeah, just a little bit.
What a couple of snots you guys are.
Propane is fine for a weekday night when you need to do something quickly.
But you can't use it for
so, you know, we'll go buy a smoker and then you can leave me alone.
Okay.
Anyways.
Anyway.
I would agree with that. I think that barbecue is, I think when most people talk about barbecue and they want to go to a barbecue restaurant, they have a fixed idea of what they're going to be getting when they walk into that restaurant.
But don't you think that's completely regionally based?
I do.
Where you grew up,
yes,
right?
I do. But the one thing that won't be regionally based is the idea that that is low and slow smoked. It's going to be indirect smoke. If you go to North Carolina, one of the barbecue capitals, you go to Memphis, you go to Kansas City, you go to Texas, everybody, that's what they're going to do. And they're going to be doing it over wood. To me, that's a very crucial point.
And when we talk about...
otherwise, you're cooking it in an oven.
Right. A lot of people cheat.
Yes.
You know, they put their ribs or they cook slow and low in the oven because they don't know how to control their grills.
Or they could make more money doing it that way.
Yeah, but I think people also... like the difference between something, a grilled meat and barbecue also has to do with all the sauces and all of that, too, that you put on the chicken or the ribs, because...
it looks like Jim totally disagrees with you.
Well, Jim works for the Washington Post, so he would know. But no, I mean, you know, I'm saying that that's one of the reasons you're here, because I think there are these broad definitions of what's barbecue and what's grilling.
Right. Well, I think the sauce thing is a whole other matter, because... yeah, sauces are regional, but if you take something like in Texas, it depends on how... in Texas, for example, they don't sauce the meat while it's cooking. Okay. Other places might, although a lot of places in North Carolina don't sauce the meat while it's cooking.
Don't they do it to finish it off?
No.
I mean at the end.
Not at the beginning, not in the middle, no. They may offer you or have sauce on the table, but...
do we want sauce with what we're eating?
No, you don't need to.
Sorry, that's wet brisket, yeah?
Yeah, that's moist brisket.
Mm-hmm.
What does moist brisket mean?
So there's two muscles in the brisket. There's the flat and there's the point.
Mm-hmm.
The moist comes from the point. So a lot of times with that point, if you get... There's a big line of fat that separates the two muscles.
Right.
And that often gets kind of into the cut with it, so it's fattier.
And I think our listeners should know that while we do have these... very beautiful and effete kind of drinks, cocktails that Todd brought in. I cracked open a beer.
All right, well, good for you.
Well,
so actually, I think Joe, you bring up a really good point. I'd like to get a little bit more into the regionality and the sauces, but let's talk about cuts. And I was sort of alluding to that before, like growing up, you know, I didn't grow up with pulled pork. It's not because I was Jewish. It's just because that's just not what we did for barbecue. We did baby back ribs, and we did chicken, and that was it. That was my barbecue education, and I didn't know that there was more, and the barbecue sauce was usually kind of sweet.
Right.
So if you think about it, you know, the world is smaller now in the sense of, you know, things travel, you know.
And access.
And access. So back in the day, what did they have in Texas? What was the only livestock
Longhorn steer.
Had? Exactly. So what's their barbecue?
It's cow.
Yeah. So what did they have in North Carolina?
Pigs.
So, you know, now we can get those.
Do I get an A?
Yeah. So now we can get those things all over the place. Even 50 years ago, that wasn't necessarily the case. And if you could get it, it was probably really expensive. You know, so there probably weren't a whole lot of people smoking brisket in the eastern United States just because of the cost. Same thing with pork elsewhere. You know, it was grown or raised here, and then you had to ship it somewhere else. Now we don't necessarily face those challenges, but you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, you know, they were definitely challenges.
But 30 or 40, 50 years ago, let's say, was barbecue considered not an efficient way to, It seems to me the most efficient way to cook an animal, because you can cook so many different parts.
Well, 30, 40, 50 years ago was the 60s, and we were grilling in the 60s. But it's before World War II, really, that we're talking about, and people weren't as affluent. So, some people were probably cooking outdoors out of necessity, and rich people probably were not going out back to some sort of a grill. I mean, you would know, Jim. I don't know, but am I right?
Well, Weber got started, I have to remember my history on the history of Weber, because Weber was really sort of popularized the backyard grill. I'd have to double check this, but I seem to recall it being either in the late 40s or early 50s, and then it sort of really took off
when suburbia was starting to expand.
So that was the charcoal grill.
I'm a history major.
Okay, so wait,
Joe.
But Jim.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Well, all right, so it's sort of leading towards this now, so we might as well get into it. So when Weber started and they had their kettle grills, charcoal briquettes, was that something people cooked with? I mean, all I can think of is that big bag of Kingsford charcoal briquettes.
Yeah.
Is that something that started because the grill started, or were they already...
Kingsford itself?
Yeah, I mean, what were those for?
Ford had to do something with all his wood scraps.
That's right.
Oh.
Yeah. Ford created charcoal.
Okay, I had no idea.
Yeah, so they back on the Model T assembly lines, they wound up with all this, sawdust, essentially. And he was like, oh, what can we do with it? And they found a way to press it with essentially real charcoal. And then that's the charcoal briquette.
But then who was using charcoal briquettes at that point?
How were they marketing it?
They were marketing it. You did not have a big home industry at that point. You didn't have the Webers and whatnot.
Right.
So they were primarily selling to restaurants, which would be grilling steaks over it, things like that.
Oh, instead of hardwood.
Yeah.
Right.
Right, because it burned longer and better.
Because, I don't know that it burned better, but it
burned longer.
Well,
that was the selling point, right?
Yeah, like, right.
Well, I'm guessing they sold it cheap, too, because it was a byproduct.
And it became coals much more quickly than wood did, obviously. So, so maybe that sort of takes us someplace, because, not to drop names, but we had Mark Bittman on our show yesterday.
That was a big name drop.
And he wrote a book called How to Grill Everything, because he's written every other cookbook.
But that was specific to grilling, not necessarily barbecuing.
But we asked
about
gas versus charcoal versus wood, and his answer was, you can really doesn't matter. Cook with anything. I get the sense that you two are purists.
But that's because, upon reflection, we were talking about grilling.
Yep.
We weren't specific to barbecue. And his recipes were really about, I mean, there were a couple slow and lows in there, but most of them were like vegetables. You know, he's very heavy vegetable. I mean, there's a little chicken, there's a little meat. But, upon really looking at the recipes, it's a lot of quick cooking, which is grilling.
It's convenient.
It's convenient. It's easy. You're outside. You don't have to be in the kitchen in the hot
summer. Tuesday night. Weather's nice.
Right.
Got to fire something up quick
for
dinner.
Let's talk about, if you've got a 3 or 4 pound steak for the family, how long would it take to barbecue that, to smoke it, and then
You wouldn't do that to a steak.
You could. I mean, that's prime rib, essentially. We smoke prime ribs.
But I mean,
do you really?
Yeah, bone-in prime rib, smoked.
Right. Because you're right that gas cooking is quick and easy, and let's sit down and eat. But so if you're really going to invest the time in really barbecuing something, what are the sort of, on a number of different kinds of meats and weights and all that, what's it take?
Average brisket for us is going to take about 14 hours.
My kids will kill and eat the dogs by then.
And that's a labor-intensive 14 hours. And when I say labor-intensive, I mean somebody has to be there the whole time. It's not necessarily hard work.
Because you're mopping it, or
no? We got to manage the fire.
You just have to keep that fire stoked.
Yeah, we have to add wood to our fire about every hour to an hour and a half, depending on where we are in the process.
Okay, well, let's back up. What are you cooking it in?
So we have an offset smoker. So offset means the fire isn't directly under. Okay, so we have indirect heat.
So is that like one of those things that raise and fall?
No, it doesn't. Okay. We just have a 500-gallon drum. That's it. There's not a lot of technology or bells and whistles. We basically have steel and wood and a fire. And that's kind
fire
of our
firebox, right?
Yeah, we have. So our firebox is off of the cylinder. Okay, so imagine a 500-gallon cylinder.
So the smoke is then funneled through.
Yeah, and then the smoke goes, and the chimney is on the same side as the fire. And we have what's called a reverse flow plate. And the smoke and heat travel under that plate, which in turn helps heat up the chamber.
It's like a catalytic converter.
Yeah, basically. But
see, I'm smart, Nikki.
Okay, good for you.
But we're cooking meat with it. And then it comes back over the meat and out the chimney. So
You're getting the heat and the smoke from the fire. Nothing else is involved in the process.
And what kind of wood do you use? Does it matter?
Use oak. Yeah, it does. The wood that you use will impart a very distinct flavor.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what are some popular woods I personally don't like. I don't care for hickory or mesquite.
Okay.
I don't like. We use oak. I like oak because I find it to be well-balanced. A lot of what we try and do is well-balanced, and I just find that oak is the right amount of flavor without being overpowering.
Didn't mesquite have its like heyday in the 80s? Like, wasn't it this like Arizona wood that everybody
That's why
or New Mexico,
trees in Arizona.
Right?
There's a very Texas mesquite is a lot in West Texas, and it's great for fast grilling of fish. Like if you're gonna do 5 minutes on a fish fillet mm-hmm. or a steak, it imparts a fantastic flavor. If you're
but
gonna
it's
do
too heavy, maybe?
Oh, way too heavy to take
like
it.
Oily?
Much yeah. too much resin.
What
yeah.
about
Yeah.
health concerns because you know Bittman said it doesn't matter there are no
You're
health
not
concerns
in the mic.
Well, all right, so let's try it again. What about health concerns? Because when Bittman was on, he said it doesn't really matter, it's not a big deal, but there's creosote in wood, and so when the creosote comes off the wood,
actually what Mark Bittman said was that's not what's going to kill you.
He said you're not going to yeah a car's yeah. going to kill you, but isn't there if you're an avid barbecuer or griller, isn't that going to affect your health?
Studies have been done on this, and the smoking of meat does not, they've not been able to find any real connection to, say, cancer or anything else. The grilling of meat, however, if the char that you get from the grilling of meat,
which is so good.
Killing
me softly.
Yeah, it's taken a few years off my life, no doubt.
Char grilling.
It's arguable, it's still unclear. But it's possible that that might have some health effects. But it's, again, it's...
Are these studies being done by Reynolds Tobacco? Or by
No, they're done by the government. And so, yeah. But the smoking does not create that same intensity that the grilling does on a char.
Well, what about burnt ends? Everybody loves the ends.
So burnt ends is a whole nother right. thing. So that's Kansas City style. You're getting into a whole nother.
Okay, all right. Well, then you know what? I'm going to. So we have to take a break.
All right.
So we're going to take a quick break. While we're on our break, we're going to be eating barbecue. And when we come back, let's talk about the regionality of barbecue in this country. And Joe, I'd love to talk about like how you decided which way you were going to go.
Okay.
So we're going to take a quick break. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Industry Night. We're talking barbecue, and it's barbecue season. We'll be back in just a sec.
So the theme song to the program is produced by Rectech, W-R-E-C-K-T-E-C-H, and this song is produced by Kido, K-I-E-D-O. Find them both on SoundCloud. We will be right back. Stay tuned.
We're back on Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast, David and Nikki Nellis. And today we're talking about a very deep subject, very politically. It's a hot topic right now, I think, here in Washington. It's barbecuing and grilling. And we've got Jim Shaheen from the Washington Post and Joe Newman from Sloppy Mamas. I don't know. Washington Post, sloppy mamas. You say them in the same sentence, and somehow it lifts one up and it brings one down, I think. And I'm not going to say which one, because I'm eating for free here. But we're talking about barbecue, and off the air, we were sort of talking about whether or not, whether you use gas, whether you use wood, whether you use charcoal, if there are any health, you know, concerns. And it sounds like it's really, you know, the jury's out. Basically.
No, it doesn't sound like the jury's out at all.
There's research that's inconclusive.
No, what Jim said was that there is no research that indicates that smoking meats causes any sort of ill health benefits, but that when you are grilling, if you put a sear or a heavy char and it burns, that the chemicals within that can be potentially harmful, but compared to everything else you're doing in your daily life, not necessarily so much.
You know
much.
What? You and I have something in common because she does my talking for me, too.
I'm just really good at summarizing.
Pass that brisket over here, baby.
Red alert days.
You summarized excellently.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks it's a lot of work for me.
Thanks a lot, Jim.
As we were saying, as we were going to break, though, we were talking about wood, and I wanted to get into regionality. So, Jim, I want to start with you on that because there are so many different kinds of barbecue based on where you grow up and what you know and the regions here. So I'd love to understand the differences between the different regions of barbecue and if you both of you know sort of how they got started would be really helpful.
Well, they're generally, although this has changed somewhat in recent years, but generally for a very long time there have been four primary areas that were considered barbecue capitals. One was North Carolina, the other Memphis, third was Kansas City, and the fourth was Texas. Mm-hmm. And then within North Carolina, there's an Eastern North Carolina style and a Western North Carolina style, or really more specifically Piedmont, because it's not really Western North Carolina. And well, they just call it that. And on the Eastern North Carolina style, that's whole hog, and it's got a thin vinegar pepper sauce. Mm-hmm. And typically the pulled pork there, when they do a pulled pork sandwich, it'll have a creamy coleslaw on it. The Western North Carolina style, or the Piedmont style, will be pork shoulder, and they will have a vinegar, their vinegar pepper sauce will have a little tomato or ketchup in it. And that also...
So it's a little sweeter.
A little bit sweeter.
Is there a why to that? Like why the two develop so differently?
Well, it's just that, you know, to be honest with you, I'm not sure how the tomato part entered into the Western.
Some Italian guy.
Yeah, maybe some Italian guy. But that's what you're going to get when you go. And Lexington is sort of the ground zero for Western style. And when you go there, you're also going to get that. The coleslaw is going to be more of a vinegar pepper sauce kind of coleslaw, and that's what they're going to get on the sandwich there. South Carolina has come on stronger lately as a kind of a barbecue capital, and everybody thinks of it as a mustard-based kind of region. And it is, but it's also got, you know, the PD region, which is more of a kind of an extension of the North Carolina, Eastern North Carolina version, whole hog and whatnot. And they also have a red sauce, which you're going to find.
Okay, can we back up? Because you said pork shoulder and then whole hog.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about whole hog, that's just, they're using the entire pig for pulled pork, or they're breaking it up and doing different things with it?
They're generally doing the entire hog for pulled pork. So what they're going to do is they're going to take, now where that started from is pig pickings, and those started basically on the plantation. So for at holiday times, you know, the masters of the plantation would have these big events, or maybe, you know, one of their daughter got married or something, and there'd be, so it wasn't like today where you go to a restaurant and you get barbecue all the time. This was, you know, labor intensive, and you've seen those sort of sepia toned and black and white photos. Mm-hmm. And they were very intensive things to do, and so people from all around would come and participate in these barbecues. And then around the same time, you'd have these political barbecues where hundreds, even thousands of people would show up, and they'd make barbecue for people that come forward and try to, you know,
for the politicians
curry favor. Yeah, well, and for the people in the residences around there. So So what you do is on a whole hog, so there'd be a pig picking. So all these people would come out for the pig picking, and they'd pick from different parts, the ham, the shoulder, the different aspects of the pig. Then gradually, as time went on, that's how, like if you go to Ada, North Carolina, which has one of the great, great whole hog places in the world. They're just spectacular there. A place called Skylight Inn.
Take notes, everybody.
Oh, my gosh. This place is great. And the guy that founded it, he's now dead, but his son, not his son, but his nephew, rather. I think it's his nephew. Pete Jones founded it. And the first time I went there, I'll never forget, he was a short guy with a cigarette permanently attached to the side of his mouth. And he had a very un-Hollywood-like stubble. And Pete Jones, everybody recognizes Skylight Inn as one of these really great whole hog cooking places. And if you go down there, they're going to take the different parts of the animal and they're going to chop it up and they're going to give you this fantastic, incredible sandwich. And so that's basically a Carolina style. Then in Memphis, and I'm going to sort of go through this a little quickly so that, you know, I'm not taking too much time.
I guess we only have an hour show.
Yeah.
Right.
Memphis is, there's more to it than this, but it's basically, we think of Memphis as ribs and dry ribs and wet ribs. Dry is not really dry. It's an unfortunate word. It just means it's not sauced.
Right. It's rubbed.
Yeah, it's just rubbed. Now, they do pulled pork sandwiches there, too. And one of the greatest sandwiches I've ever had, it should be on everybody's top 10 list, is Payne's, and Payne's makes a pulled pork sandwich with a tangy, spicy red sauce in it and a mustard-based coleslaw on top that we should get in the van.
Oh, my God, I think we need a field trip. Well, Joe, you and your wife are doing barbecue field trips.
This is outside of Memphis?
We're going to have to get on the Memphis.
It's in Memphis.
All right, so
it's in Memphis.
I drove across the country 15 years ago, and we stopped in what looked like it hit by a hurricane, and it was a rib place, barbecue place, and the guy, that's why Joe and I were trying to figure out if we could figure who the guy is. He was a former Big Hoss running back for the Arkansas Razorbacks who got hurt and never went pro, and he came home and took his grandmother's mother's recipe and they had medals and ribbons all over the wall, national champion and all that. Do you have any idea who that is?
I'm not sure who that would be.
It was not in Memphis. It was in some, little burg.
I'm not
there
sure
must
who
be
that would
so
be. But
many.
Well, there's a zillion of them.
But this guy was like greatest barbecue guy in the world awards.
Well, I have a thing about that because there are so many competitions. It's easy to get those trophies. I'm a little suspicious when I see all those trophies, to tell you the truth.
You're not jaded.
I don't know. More often than not, when I see all those trophies, it's almost an inverse relationship to how good the barbecue is going to be. When I don't see a lot of stuff, like Skylight Inn doesn't have any of that stuff. Payne's doesn't have any of that stuff. One other thing I like about Payne's, too, which you don't see much in barbecue, is it's female-owned. And, in fact, it's African-American female-owned, which is even more. You don't see much of.
Right.
So those are the two. Then there's Kansas City, which it's known for its sweet sauce and its burnt ends, as Joe mentioned. And then Texas, which has different styles, but the one that most people think of when they think of Texas is the Central Texas style that came basically from the Czechs and Germans. And it's the offset smoker style, and it's brisket, and it's unsauced. Mm-hmm. And those are the four basic ones, but there are sorts of other styles out there.
Well, so Joe, I know that you started basically because you did a pig roast one day, right?
Yep. Yeah, my wife and I catered the wedding, and we did a pig roast because I lived in Southern Virginia, right on the border of North Carolina, so we were into the Carolina, barbecue for special events, and we were having a special event and wanted good food, so we were like, we're going to do a pig roast.
Mm-hmm. And so, okay, so you did your pig roast, and you were like, this is pretty good. And then, but how did you decide on your, because now you have Sloppy Mamas.
Yep.
And you offer, we're tasting a delicious variety of things here today. How did you decide on your style, on your wood, and your offerings? Because one of the things we haven't talked about today is chicken, because we got some chicken, and you make your own sausages. Oh, is that pork? Oh my God, I thought it was chicken. Okay. Do you do chicken?
Yeah.
Okay. Do. Well, so you
but
do.
I didn't bring it because.
Hold on, I mean, I'm not. Okay.
Joe, don't worry. I knew it was pork.
No, he had no
chicken's
idea.
Chicken's like, I mean, it's
almost like a vegetable.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
You know, it's like barbecue in barbecue places. Yeah. No, I love barbecue chicken when it's done right.
Yeah, of course.
But okay, so how did you decide on your style and your sauce? Like, how did you decide how you were going to execute everything?
So being in Washington, D.C., there really isn't D.C. barbecue.
No, there
it doesn't.
Isn't.
It's not a thing. It doesn't exist. There's no D.C. style barbecue.
Right.
But we are in the nation's capital, and being in the nation's capital, we decided that we were going to do the best of everything being in the nation's capital. So that
no
meant,
small order.
No, that meant doing pork Carolina style. That meant doing brisket Central Texas style. That meant doing ribs Memphis style.
Well, you know, pork is very big on Capitol Hill.
Yes, this is true.
Okay, so, please continue.
Yeah, we take care of the Ways and Means Committee all the time. You know, so.
And they find their ways and their means.
Yes. It was a conscious decision to do what is best in America, what we think is best in America, in the nation's capital.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of thought, like, Washington, D.C., it's the nation's capital. It should have the best things. So we're working to make the best of all those things. That's why we use the offset smoker. That's why we work through the night. You know, we're not like working with a gas oven and setting a knob or anything like that. We're doing the hard things and trying to do all the little things well to bring the best of everything here.
Well, so then what about replicating the sauces?
So the sauces, we did a very similar thing. Like the Kansas City sauce, you know, Kansas City sauce is known. That's one of the things that goes with the style of barbecue in Kansas City. They sauce in some way, shape, or form. Some places might, you know, put
it
on.
You mean like mop throughout?
Yeah. Okay. Well, with the mops, you got to be careful because you can't have sugar in it because you're cooking for so long that
it caramelizes.
Exactly. And then it's going to burn.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Kansas City traditionally is some sort of sweet tomato-based sauce. Usually the stronger sweetener is molasses, which is no different from ours. You know, molasses is fairly forward in our Kansas City sauce. We do the Georgia Gold sauce. We used to call our sauces North Carolina and South Carolina, and we had the vinegar base for North Carolina and the mustard base for South Carolina. However, internally, we kept mixing them up because they'd be like, get the Carolina, you know? And then it always wound up being the vinegar one, but sometimes it wasn't supposed to be. So we actually rebranded that really early just for communication purposes in the kitchen. And the mustard-based sauce is not only South Carolina, it's also Georgia, it's also Northern Florida, and it even gets into, like, if you've ever been to Dreamland Barbecue down in Southern Alabama, that's a mustard-based barbecue sauce also. So it's almost like this, I don't know, reverse C shape of mustard sauce kind of in the southeastern United States. So we just named it Georgia Gold, so it came out. Well,
so I guess my question is for these sauces, and this mm-hmm. goes to both of you, and these cooking styles, they are all for specific cuts of meat, right? So like the sauces aren't for everything, right?
No, and we don't cook with any of the sauces. Those
are just for
afterwards.
Dipping.
Yeah, you know, you can dip it, you can put it on a sandwich, you know, mm-hmm.
They be for everything?
They can be.
All right.
They can be. But no, I just mean like, so like if you're doing ribs, mm-hmm. right, you're doing them Kansas City style.
No, we do our ribs Memphis style.
Oh, you're doing your ribs Memphis style.
Dry rub. We don't put any sauce on them.
You don't put any sauce on them. Okay. What made you decide to pick that?
Memphis is known for good ribs.
Okay. Well Kansas City is,
let me ask a question.
Yeah.
Because people who are going to go on a you know, say a ribs pilgrimage and all that. Like I remember going to the Stockyards at Kansas City mm-hmm. and having, you know, a good meal, but I mean, are you better off staying away from the big cities and finding some little podunk place, or have you written a book?
I have not written a book.
You gotta write a book.
Yeah.
I mean, where do you go if you're going to do a road trip to try all the different kinds of barbecue? How do you find out where to go?
Well, because there are, as it happens, a zillion books out there that will suggest where to go. There's also a lot of internet stuff that you can use. And I've written a lot about this stuff. You can go on Washington Post, look up my archive, and you'll find. And I always
shameless plug.
Shameless plug.
That's okay. Well, that's what you're on here for.
But there's lots of recommendations out there for places to go when you go places. It used to be, yes, that this is a very rural art form,
mm-hmm.
but now it's become much, 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 much more urban.
Well, I want to go back to what you were talking about earlier, about women
uh-huh.
in barbecue, because you know, when we were talking off air, I said, I do all the grilling in the house, and I really do.
I resent that remark.
You can resent it.
No, she does do all the grilling. I just resent it.
Right. But
Sloppy Mamas is a woman-owned business,
yes, because your wife is involved. Absolutely.
She's the boss.
She's the boss. Of course she is. Yeah. But there is this perception out there that women don't barbecue and that women don't grill. They don't do either. Why is that?
Well, because it is mainly men who do it. It isn't just a perception. It really is primarily men who do it. It's primarily men who own these places. It's primarily men that go into the backyard to buy these grills and all that. That said, there are some very influential women in the business now. Melissa Cookston, who's won all these major awards, Memphis in May. I think she's won it like, I don't know, 3 or 4 times or something. I mean, she's amazing. And I'm embarrassed right now that I just can't recall her name right now because I've talked to her many times, but she's like the top chef at Hill Country Barbecue. And she's from North Carolina. She lives in New York now, but it was super influential. And there are actually, if you were to look on the internet, you're going to find women-only classes, too, in barbecue and grilling.
That also brings me to what David said earlier about these massive barbecue competitions. I mean, Joe, are you participating in any of that? Because that's another world.
Yeah, it's another world. Barbecue competitions are for rich people and for established restaurants.
Okay.
We are neither yet. Working towards both.
Do you want to the competitions?
You know,
Jim is not pro competition.
Part of me thinks it would be fun just on one hand just to do, just as, you know, but not for work purposes, just for, you know, like get together some friends and we'll we'll drink all night and smoke some meat.
But there's something else about this. When you talk about Hill Country, that's sort of a big batch barbecue place.
Correct.
And you're like a craft barbecuer.
Correct.
So in terms of their ability to control quality and to maintain a level of consistency in each of the different products, like, you know, Joe's standing over this thing 12 hours a day, loving it to death. He might as well give it a name and rock it to sleep. How do they manage to maintain, you know, basically a level of signature quality?
Hire more people. I mean, because they do theirs.
Because they're a chain.
Well, it's not. Well, they're a small
even
chain.
Even in the individual stores.
But they also, here in Washington, D.C., they use all wood, too. They stopped using their gas. So they, you know, they just have people that are, and they also.
I have Chef Ash Folk. Is that correct? Chef Ash Folk of Hill Country Barbecue.
Yeah, well,
that's a guy.
Yeah, I'm glad you're looking her up, though. But now I'm back to.
That's the only one I came up with. Yeah. Okay, but anyway, sorry.
TikTok,
go ahead.
TikTok.
There are other barbecue places also that use all wood, and it's just a matter of how you man what kind of system you're using. Like, some of them don't use an offset, for example. They'll use there's a type that's in Texas that a lot of people are using now. You'll see it a lot in Manhattan. You'll see it in New York. Yes, that's right.
What is that?
It's essentially a very large box that holds a fire with almost like a rotisserie inside. It's kind of like this cross between a rotisserie and a conveyor belt. And there's, you know, basically a big fire that's in a slightly separate chamber from it, and then rotates through on this kind of rotisserie / conveyor belt thing. I'd like to play with them on Sunday. They're crazy expensive. Yeah,
they are.
It's not a cheap piece of equipment.
No, they're really efficient. And some of the food that comes out of them are great. You know, I've eaten at some of the, like, Mighty Quinn's in New York and some of the other places that have them, and they're great. They're all wood.
What's it like to get paid to eat, Jim?
Well, it's unfortunately a little too good.
It's the job I hanker after, right?
What are you talking about?
What?
I mean, we don't get paid to eat, but we eat pretty well.
We eat pretty well, but I mean, Jim...
We drink pretty
Jim, I'm sending you to South Carolina, and I want you to spend 10 days eating barbecue. Oh, do I have to?
Well, start pitching stories.
It kind of gets like that after a while, to tell you the truth.
So to speak to the equipment Jim was talking about earlier, so we use an offset smoker. So it's a 500-gallon drum. There's no other electricity. There's no gas involved in our process. And so there's a trade-off. You know, you talked about Hill Country. They're kind of a meat factory. It's like, how do you, you know, how do you maintain the quality? You know, there's temperature knobs and things like that. And, you know, you can, there's technology benefiting the process to help maintain, you know, consistency. So for us, when we're doing our barbecue, that comes from like somebody being on top of every single piece of meat.
That's
so we
experience.
Have, yeah. And right. You have to, like, there's different hot spots in the smoker. It's not a uniform, you know, temperature all throughout. So in one zone, you know, it's this temperature. In another zone, it's that temperature. And you have to take, you know, we'll put the bigger pieces of meat because not all, you know, not all the briskets and pork shoulders come
are
out
the same size.
Exactly. So it's like, all right, you put the bigger ones in the hot spot. Sometimes you got to rotate them around, you know, like you got to work that thing, you know, all night long to get the end product.
A great title for a song. You got to work that thing all night long.
Yeah.
What about one of the things we haven't discussed is the quality of the product. Does smoking something for 11 hours negate whether it's grass-fed or whether it's pasture-raised or anything like that?
No, I've used pasture-raised animals and, you know, animals used from, you know, I used to buy cows from a guy that raised 6 cattle and, you know, we would buy half a cow and it was incredible. That is better, but it's not cost-effective.
Right, I know, you know, it's super expensive.
Yeah, so, you know, I would love to be smoking a brisket that was, you know, eating nothing but grass.
What about the Randall Linebeck cow? Ever heard of it?
I have.
We had them on our show.
We had John on our, was it Joe?
Oh, he was the same day.
Oh.
He was there, no, but we had them on this show too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, those are just, in other words, you would have to have such a
so
premium price.
I actually reached out to them to try and do some briskets for the Edible DC event that we're doing tomorrow night.
Oh, yeah.
But they were in the middle of their processing calendar and they couldn't get brisket for me because normally briskets, if you're not selling briskets, is ground beef. So, you know, Joe was talking about the economics of the cow that day, and I think he said, I don't know, 50% of this is going to wind up being ground beef or something like that. A lot of processors wind up sending the briskets for ground beef if they don't sell brisket. He doesn't sell brisket, so it winds up being ground beef. And we linked up for this event tomorrow night too late to kind of get the briskets. I know. But
because,
I was hoping to use those for that.
Because I'll be honest, their meats are, they're fantastic.
Well, see, you raise a really interesting question here because, like, Aaron Franklin changed the game in Austin, Texas.
Franklin's.
Right, Franklin Barbecue. And how among the ways he changed the game, a number of ways, but one of them was he used a higher quality meat.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, barbecue was a poor person's food. That's what it was. It could feed a lot of people. And I remember when I first moved to D.C. in 2001, I couldn't find a brisket. I would have to go to Texas, bring like 2 or 3 back in my luggage, and they were select at that time, which is the lowest grade you can get. It's because that's what everybody did. They created their magic. The thing that made barbecue so magical back then was the fact that you took a lowly piece of meat and you, through
slow and low.
Through alchemy, you know, what Joe's talking about, I'd be up all night long, baby, in the brisket, and you turn out this spectacular product. Now, people are using prime. And so now, what used to be, you know, a $4 sandwich or something is now a $12 sandwich.
Right.
And things like that. And so it's really, really, really changed. The whole game has changed.
But you haven't actually answered the question I was saying to Joe, although Joe answered it for me, which is, since these were for cheaper, barbecue initially was for cheaper cuts, right? Cooking something slow and low means you're going to break down a piece of meat that you can't cook quickly because it needs the time to break down, mm-hmm. right? And that's what barbecue is all about, slow and low. So you could use cheaper cuts.
Right.
But if you're buying better quality product.
Are you going to have better barbecue?
Yes. Are you going to have better barbecue? Forget consciously.
Arguable. Arguable. Okay. And I'll say, here's why I say arguable. It's because I went to a brisket, it's called Brisket Camp, that they have at Texas A&M.
Oh, let's go to Brisket Camp. That sounds like fun.
And everybody there is a complete barbecue nerd.
Okay.
You know? And everybody there is, not everybody there, but I don't know how many. A good percentage of them are Texans, which means that they're really super familiar with brisket. So then you rate blindly select, choice, prime.
It's like a blind wine tasting.
Yeah, it's like a blind wine. Exactly. And I got to tell you, I think, I don't remember, I think Select ended up coming out like second. It would really surprise me because the texture's different.
Well, plus
So it depends partly on what it is. The flavor isn't that different.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, I mean, the flavor's somewhat different. But the texture, you're going to have a bit of a firmer texture than you're going to get. It's a sort of a, almost an olive oily taste with Prime.
Mm-hmm.
So is it better? Do you sort of swoon a little more with the Prime? Yeah, one can't argue. I've had Aaron Franklin's barbecue. It's insanely good.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculously good. But if you are good at what you do, can you turn out something pretty damn good?
Yes.
Yeah.
That makes sense to
me. And to get, you know, I agree completely. And to get to, like, back to the cooking equipment stuff, like, even if somebody is using, like, a wood-assisted oven or something like that, like, you can, if they cook it properly, you're still going to get a good meal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it as good as if it was cooked properly in a smoker? No. But, you know, like, you can still get, you know, a good meal out of it, which is the, you know, the end goal.
All right. You know what? We got to wrap up.
I know. We do have to wrap up. Well, before we do, Joe, I'd like for people to know where they can find Sloppy Mamas. Yep. I know you cater.
I was just going to say.
And you're opening up in some local. Like, tell everybody your 411.
Yeah, sure. So we have the food truck and catering. You can go to sloppymamas.com to get all that stuff, that information for that. We also have a stand at Union Market, and we are opening later this year in the Ballston Food Hall as well.
So at your stand in Union Market.
Oh, we got one more.
Sorry. Wait, don't you? Aren't you at
Sally's Tavern?
Sally's
at the corner of 11th and
Union. But you're doing breakfast sandwiches there, right? Yeah,
only on Uber Eats. We're doing breakfast sandwiches and breakfast burritos on Uber Eats.
Only on Uber Eats?
Only on Uber Eats, because there's not a lot of foot traffic in the morning.
At Sally's?
Yeah, and like we're, at 11th and U, I mean, it's not it's not a lot of people there.
Just a walk of shame.
Yeah, pretty much, especially on the weekends.
You should give those away.
Hey. You should have a little kiosk out front, man. You can make some money.
Walk of shame burrito. Here you go.
That's right. Somebody going by on one high heel.
You should totally name it the Walk of Shame Burrito.
That's a good one.
Yeah. That would be great.
With some Tabasco
in it. And I want credit for it, by the way.
Of course you do. All right, and Jim, how often does Smoke Signals run in the Post?
It runs in the summertime. We basically come out once a month. I just got done yesterday doing a big, it'll be in June, the next. Well, I have a story in May, and that's how to use your entire grill when you're cooking, because most of us only make what we're having that evening, like a hot dogs or burger. So I'm talking about that. And then yesterday, I did a big hamburger test, blended meats, different meats, and I had a bunch of people over. We rated them, so that'll be
in June.
Thanks
for the invite.
I was going to say, my invitation is probably stuck in the email somewhere.
I'm sorry. Yeah,
thanks a lot, pal.
You'll get invited to the next one.
Yeah.
Well, I think I was pretty forceful with that, you know, just now.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming on air today and for bringing all this delicious barbecue from Sloppy Mamas. The sausages, which we didn't get to talk, the half smokes.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So, yeah, we make that ourselves.
Right.
And we sell them at Sally's Tavern.
They're fabulous. They're really, you don't sell them to go, right? You already take care of them. Like, you can't buy them.
Yeah, we're selling them to cooked.
Okay, cool. Yep. Anyway, so thank you for bringing everything in. This was an absolutely delicious show. You know, you can hear it on Full Service.
Can we do it again next week?
Actually, we're not going to
be
here next
week. I'm not sure I got my fill. Well, the week after.
Actually, the week after, we have a really interesting show. For those of you who have thought about doing sous vide cooking, we are bringing in the experts from Culinaria. They're coming in to talk about how to sous vide all your food. And actually, a lot of people are sous viding and then throwing it on the grill. So we're sort of staying on topic there a little bit.
I went to college with a girl named sous vide.
No, you didn't.
I did go to college with a girl named Rhoda Reuter.
And nobody cares. Seriously, nobody cares. Anyway, we want to thank both of our guests for joining us today. And we want to thank you for checking in. This is David and Nikki Nellis, Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast at the Line Hotel. Have a delicious week.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.